RTC. Hello there. Today is Thursday, June 16th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the message of Orlando Strong continues as the community struggles with how to help. President Obama will meet with survivors on Thursday. Sunday's terror attack has once again revived the gun debate in the U.S. Rescuers find the body of a toddler killed in an alligator attack.
Likely no question in my mind that the child was drowned by the alligator.
Also ahead, what the U.S. Federal Reserve says about interest rates and playing could be a game changer for kids. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, President Obama is going to Orlando, Florida today, a city shaken by the cold-blooded massacre where 49 people were killed in the deadliest shooting in U.S. history. Authorities say earlier this month, that shooter legally bought the weapons used in the attack, including a semi-automatic assault rifle. The tragedy has reignited the gun debate. And on Wednesday, 3 days after the Orlando attack that left 49 dead, Democratic lawmakers said they'd had enough. VOA Capitol Hill correspondent Catherine Gibson is with us. Catherine, fill us in on what happened.
This is really the capstone to what has been a week of members of Congress coming back, hearing the news about the Orlando shooting and saying, once again, we can't have these moments of silence. We can't acknowledge these tragedies without action. So on the House floor Monday night, they started chanting pass the bills, pushing for gun control legislation, and the Republican leadership would not recognize some of the Democrats who were asking for that. That turned into a whole tense, chaotic situation on the House floor. And then you just heard over these past days, as more news of Orlando came out, people saying that we really have to do something this time around. This is the worst mass shooting that we've ever had in the United States. What's going to happen other than these moments of silence? And so I think this Senate filibuster really jumps off from those feelings and emotions that have been brewing in Congress these past few days.
For folks out there that don't understand what that means, a filibuster, can you just give us a brief explanation?
Sure. So it's basically a fancy way of saying stalling. The Senate Democrats are basically stalling the business on the Senate floor by talking about this issue that they care about. They're trying to push gun control legislation, and they're saying they're just going to keep on talking, keep on stalling the business of the Senate floor until there's some movement and some sign that they can vote on gun control legislation.
Did it seem like they were making any progress?
In terms of a filibuster, they've been known to go on for hours on end. And fortunately, in some filibusters, it has to be the one person talking. But in this case, because of the rules, they are allowed to switch on and off so different people can come on. So it's a very much a team effort on the part of the Senate Democrats.
Is this just symbolic, or could they actually get something accomplished this way?
That's a great question. And that's the question that was being asked over on the side of the House of Representatives yesterday and on Monday. You know, how do we really make movement on this? People thought that there would be movement after Newtown when 20-something children were shot and killed. They thought that it would happen when the people in the movie theater in Aurora were killed. The question is on everybody's minds, what is the thing that changes this? Maybe the filibuster is.
What are some of the ideas they are looking at as far as passing gun control legislation?
So some of the ideas for gun control legislation are coming directly from some of the aspects of the investigation that are emerging from the Orlando shooting. We know that the shooter in Orlando had been investigated twice by the FBI. Some Republicans are calling for what's called the no-fly, no-buy, which means that if you are on the FBI terror watch list, you are not allowed to purchase a gun. There are also calls for enhanced background checks and those types of things that would stall some of the bad people from getting their hands on guns.
Thanks so much, Catherine. Well, that conversation about guns is happening across the nation, not just on Capitol Hill. I spoke with Colette Martin with the group Parents Against Gun Violence. Colette, where does your group stand on the gun issue?
Our stance is quite simply one of common sense gun reform. We are made up of an administrative team that includes both gun owners and non-owners. We believe that things like universal background checks at the federal level. That's going to be a game changer to a certain degree. An assault weapons ban and high-capacity magazine ban need to be seriously considered in this country with the amount of mayhem and devastation that we've seen. Those are military weapons developed for military purposes, and it doesn't matter what whitewashed, cutesy name the gun lobby comes up for them, like modern sporting rifle. They are weapons of war. They have no business in our streets, in our homes, and walking around Walmart. The military developed them for military applications to the highest in lethality.
Pro-gun supporters say more guns right. would prevent gun deaths.
First of all, Florida, where this massacre took place, has the highest number of concealed carry weapons licenses in the country. They stand at 1.5 million. So surely, if there was a state in the country where a concealed carrying good guy was going to stop something, it would most likely happen in Florida. The shooter on Sunday morning engaged the good guy with the gun. It was a cop who was on duty standing outside of that club with his service weapon, his handgun. The shooter did not care and certainly tried to take him out. Thank God he didn't succeed in that because the officer was able to retreat and call for backup and probably saved many lives. Civilians, time and time again, have not been able to stop an active shooter.
We have become the top in the world for gun deaths.
Correct.
Would more gun laws prevent gun deaths?
More gun laws can lessen the amount of carnage that we see on a daily and yearly basis. That is absolutely certain. And all you have to do to prove that is look at states that have a package of relatively strong gun laws. But they're still not, by international standards, I wouldn't say any of our states have particularly strong gun laws. 33,000 gun deaths a year in this country. Two-thirds of them are suicide. We do a terrible job of separating those in mental crises of any kind from firearms. And you see that affecting certain populations more than others. You know, older white men have a real suicide problem. Veterans in particular are dying at the rate of 22 a day. Upwards of 75% of those deaths are gun-enabled. Teenagers are killing themselves at a rate that is just mind-blowing, most often with guns found in homes. 12,000 gun murders per year is an absolutely outrageous number compared to the rest of the world, even countries where civilian gun ownership is legal and regulated. Every country in the world that allows civilian gun ownership also mandates safe storage policies. You know, we have a really terrible and embarrassing amount of child gun deaths from accidental firearms mishandling. Those numbers are absolutely pathetic. We're losing over 100 kids a year who shoot themselves or get shot by another child. That's two kids a week that are dying because a parent left a loaded handgun around. You can say that that's stupid on the parent's part, but you know what? There's no law requiring them to lock it up in most states.
There are people that have come out and said, look, guns are not the problem here. Guns are not what caused this. What do you say?
I would say that there's no way that you can disassociate the mayhem of the worst mass shooting in modern American history from easy accessibility to firearms. They are inextricably linked, and wanton, reckless access to guns in this country is responsible in some way or another for virtually every large, high-visibility mass shooting that we have. Has Europe solved the hate problem? Certainly not. Has Canada solved domestic violence? Certainly not. Any country you could name, have they solved any of those problems? And the answer would be no. Our national embarrassment should be that, yes, you know, we have all of those problems that are universal that the rest of the globe suffers from. We just make sure the people who are subject to that kind of hatred are the best armed in the world.
All right, well, we appreciate it. Meanwhile, the FBI says the wife of the shooter in Orlando had some knowledge of his plans and may have failed to alert police. A federal grand jury is considering whether to bring charges against her. Now let's take a look at what's trending on social media today. For that, we turn to International Editions G. Abby Lee. Hi, G. I'm guessing people are still talking about the Orlando tragedy.
They are. And we want to hear straight from the source always. So we're going to go straight to Senator Murphy's Twitter account. He is on Twitter at Chris Murphy CT. That's for Connecticut. And this is the most popular tweet. I am prepared to stand on the Senate floor and talk about the need to prevent gun violence for as long as I can. I've had hashtag enough. Within 5 hours, nearly 11,000 people liked that tweet.
So is hashtag enough the trending hashtag today, the big one?
Yeah, but hashtag filibuster, of course, is one of the more popular ones. And the other hashtags commonly used with that are hashtag gun sense, hashtag disarm hate, and hashtag hold the floor.
So where did you watch the filibuster?
Probably the same place that you watched it. The Huffington Post streamed it live on Facebook, and in the caption, it asked people to leave questions so its reporters on location can try to ask them. More than 21,000 people responded to that live stream, and it got more than 60,000 comments, and nearly 10,000 people shared it. CNN Politics didn't live stream the event, but posted an article about it on Facebook. The top two comments to that article came from people who opposed the filibuster. One person wrote, "All I'm hearing is screw your due process. Right to bear arm is not the only right we are being attacked on. Love how this turned from a terrorist attack to all gun owners being considered as criminals or terrorists." Another person argued after the 9/11 attack happened, there was no filibuster on airplanes. Now, to that argument, many explained new measures were introduced at the airport to strengthen the security check. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. You can also follow me at Lori London with a U. Well, here are some of the other stories we're following at voanews.com. What is the U.S. terrorist watch list and how does it work? President Obama embraces the Dalai Lama during a personal meeting at the White House. The Pentagon unleashes a cyber effort to counter militants on the battlefield. President Obama says women's equality is a national security issue. And drinking very hot beverages may be linked to cancer. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues, as does the show of solidarity in Orlando in the aftermath of Sunday's horrific murders. VOA correspondent Arash Arabasadi joins us from Orlando. Arash, it sounds like people are taking comfort by continuing to rally together.
There are two local bars. One of them is a gay bar, one of them is not a gay bar, and they're both holding fundraisers for the newly unemployed who did survive the Pulse shooting. The one bar we know is offering certain drink specials where the proceeds go straight to those who are now out of work. And the later evening get-together place called Southern Nights, the gay bar there, all the proceeds, 100%, are going to those who are now out of work. We are also been at the LGBT community center down here where there have been literally truckloads of donations. There's an entire tractor trailer truck parked in the back that is serving as a cooler for perishable food. The center now is full of all kinds of everything from toilet paper to potato chips. As of Saturday, none of it existed. And they said within a day, the place is busting at the seams. And we actually just found out that the governor will be coming by here to actually congratulate everybody for all the efforts they've been doing and thank them for being Orlando Strong.
What's the mood there? Is it still just one of solidarity and Orlando Strong, or is the reality of what has happened starting to set in at all?
No, I don't think the reality has started to set in. Folks that we talked to have told us really in no uncertain terms that they expect that next phase of anger to start coming anytime soon. But right now, it's still unity. It's still how can we pull each other up and help each other out. And in fact, where we were downtown, where there was a candlelight vigil Monday night, there's a memorial there now. There's still people there turning out by the dozens to just kind of throw an arm around each other's shoulders and be there as a sign of support. We're also told the food was taken from the center Orlando to some of the funerals that started today. So they've been going to funeral homes. They've been going to and from local businesses. And in fact, one representative of the human rights campaign down here told us that restaurants in the past who had very openly said they will not serve gay couples and that gay couples are not welcome in the restaurant have donated food and donated supplies. So once again, we can kind of see that this tragedy has transcended a lot of the political norms that have become popularized in the United States recently.
Well, Sunday's shooting massacre has also set off discussions about protections and rights of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people from all parts of our society. International Edition's Susan Yackey talked about it with Tanya Turner with the D.C. Center for the LGBT community.
This is a national tragedy. And I would like to say I, along with lots of my colleagues, were just shocked, especially in light of the fact that this is a Pride celebration. And there is so much visibility and so many people are happy and open and we're surrounded by allies. But this was a reminder that it's important to be vigilant, to be visible, and to be vocal because danger lurks and we have to advocate, stay on our toes, and always be aware.
What would your group like to see done concerning LGBT rights, human rights, in the United States?
Well, I would like to say first, I'm very fortunate to live in the District of Columbia where we have the Office of the Human Rights here that there are strong proponents and there are strong laws here to support our community. However, that is not the case throughout the country. So I would like to have more laws throughout the country that support us. And not only do we need the laws, we need to have accountability when the laws aren't followed. And we also need to have safe spaces where people feel comfortable reporting and know that their accountability will be there.
And you're a lawyer. You would like to see this legally be put down so people can be prosecuted?
Yes, absolutely. That's part of it. I think it's a twofold situation. First, there's about advocacy and making people aware. And there is the other arm of prosecuting to making sure that, again, that accountability is there. And also, I think it's important that we also acknowledge that counseling and mental health services are lacking in this country, and I think they're also important to be addressed as well.
Some of our listeners overseas and some Americans here are opposed to gays. Just in general, they're opposed to gay people. What would you like to say to those people?
Well, I can't change their hearts and minds, and I'm not trying to. I'm not asking them to like me or to like us as a community, but I'm asking them to give us basic respect and afford us the basic human rights that all people are entitled to as members of a society.
Well, now turning to another tragedy that also came out of Orlando, Florida. The sheriff of Orange County, Florida, where the Disney World theme park is located, says the body of a boy killed by an alligator on Tuesday has been found.
We recovered the remains of the two-year-old from the water, and that body has now been turned over to the Orange County Medical Examiner's Office for an autopsy.
Sheriff Jerry Demings telling reporters Wednesday that the body of Lane Graves was found intact near the area where the alligator dragged him into the water. Demings explained how it happened.
Well, there's a sandy beach area, and the family was out just simply relaxing. They had another child and a baby playpen that was in the area, and they were just simply relaxing out in the area and wading just in the water there along the lake's edge at the time that the alligator attacked the child.
The Seven Seas Lagoon reaches a depth of about 4 meters outside Disney's Grand Floridian Resort, where the family's staying on vacation. They're from the Midwestern state of Nebraska. Deming says the boy's parents jumped into the water in an effort to rescue the child. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
International Edition continues. The Federal Reserve met Wednesday to decide what to do about historically low interest rates in the United States. For more on its decision, we're joined by VOA Markets reporter Jill Malandrino. Hi, Jill. What did we learn?
Interest rates have been left unchanged, but it's not the decision itself that counts. It's the language that they use in the communique and the press conference that we look at for clues as to when the next interest rate hike might take place. In this release, they weren't explicit about that, however, and they also lowered their 2017-2018 outlook for the number of Fed fund rate hikes that are expected. Six officials now only see one more hike for 2016. That's up from only one official in the last meeting. Another interesting point was there was no dissensions this time, which signals that we will see fewer hikes because, for the most part, the data was very mixed. Labor slowing a bit, but they expect the economy to pick up, particularly in spending and housing. Inflation is below the 2% target, but they see that moving to that 2% target. So I think between now and the next meeting in July, it makes sense not to have done a hike this time because we have more inflation data. We have that key employment report that spooked the markets a couple of weeks ago that we will get in the first week of July. We have the retail sales data coming out. And in addition, we have the Brexit vote. Again, you know, it's anyone's guess when we will get another hike. In response, the banks, all those stocks tanked. Lower interest rates are not good for bank margins, so that move made sense.
It wasn't a big surprise that they didn't do anything with interest rate hikes, was it, considering the last jobs report that you mentioned that was so unexpectedly in the wrong direction?
Right. It was unexpected, but before that jobs report, there was a big expectation that they were going to do something in June because you had all the Fed speakers on the circuit talking about how they were getting more hawkish, where they thought it was time to rate hikes. But as soon as we got that disappointing jobs number, the rate hike expectations went real low. So we're kind of in the same position that we were in April or May, where it's anyone's guess when we'll have a hike.
Overall, are they concerned that economic growth is starting to slow up?
They don't see the economy slowing. It's more in the job market because they are quite positive on data that we're getting in the consumer spending and housing market. So it's not as much of our economy slowing down. I think it's macro global concerns that the Fed is looking at and the fact that our labor market is not growing as quickly as they had expected.
Well, more than 250 U.S. cities are playful communities, according to Playful City USA, a national program honoring those cities and towns for creating safer environments where kids can play. The program is run by Kaboom, a nonprofit that promotes active play as a crucial part of daily life for all kids, especially those growing up in underserved areas. Faiza El-Masri tells us more about Kaboom's philosophy and how it translates into playgrounds. VOA's Faith Lapidus narrates.
Aren't you grown-ups supposed to meet you?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Play is an important part of the childhood experience. That's the message Kaboom brings to communities as it helps them create playgrounds for neighborhood kids. Maita Moon, Kaboom's city initiative director, says over the past 20 years, the organization has built more than 2,000 playgrounds across North America.
When we look for a playground, it has to be a place that either doesn't have one or has an old one that needs to be updated.
Getting neighbors involved is key to the process. Michelle Robinson says she volunteered to help build a playground in the Virginia neighborhood she's lived in for almost 40 years because it was important for the community and for her grandchildren.
Now I can let them out and don't have to worry about where they're at because I can sit right here and watch them play from out the window.
She says the new playground has changed the way her four grandkids play.
The kids are not fighting anymore because it's something for them to do now because we have the hopscotch and other games to play out here.
In another neighborhood in Washington, Kaboom renovated an old playground. For 10 years, Kaboom has sponsored the Playful Cities USA program. Communities submit applications outlining their projects and activities, hoping to be honored as a playful city. This year, Kaboom recognized 257 of them.
We want them to start thinking about how to redesign their communities and their cities with kids in mind, because we find that if a city prioritizes kids and play, it turns into a place where families want to stay, they want to be, and families want to move to.
Kaboom also announced an exciting competition called the Play Everywhere Challenge.
This is an opportunity for cities, community groups, and nonprofits to apply for grants. We're giving away up to $1 million in grants.
The goal is to inspire city leaders to consider kids' needs when designing their communities, because play is important.
Play contributes to the well-being of the whole child. It helps them to become a healthy and balanced adult. It contributes to their social and emotional well-being. It helps them to curb obesity rates.
And through helping cities create more playgrounds, Kaboom creates a more playful society. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. And you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and follow me at Lori London. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks so much to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since Russia's invasion of Crimea and then eastern Ukraine, it has become clear that Russia is unwilling to abide by international law or live by the rules of the institutions that Russia joined at the end of the Cold War, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland. To counter the threat posed by Russia's aggression and deter any military moves against NATO territory, the United States and its NATO allies have maintained a military presence on land, sea, and air along NATO's eastern edge in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, and the three Baltic states. All 28 allies have participated in exercises, training sessions, and patrols throughout Europe supported by the U.S. To press Moscow to bring an end to the violence in Ukraine and fully implement its commitments under the Minsk agreements, the United States has worked with the European Union, the G7, and other like-minded nations to impose successive rounds of tough economic sanctions on Russia over the past 2 years. These sanctions, combined with low oil prices and Russia's continued structural weaknesses, have imposed significant costs. The United States is working to increase the resilience of countries across Europe that face pressure from Russia. To help Ukraine better monitor and secure its borders, deploy its forces more effectively, and defend its sovereignty and territorial integrity, the United States has committed over $600 million in non-lethal security assistance. The United States is also helping countries in Eastern Europe and Eurasia to strengthen their democratic institutions, reform their economies, and fight corruption. Energy diversification remains a key component in protecting vulnerable countries over dependence on Russian energy. At the same time, the U.S. will continue to look for ways to work with Russia in areas of common interest, including nonproliferation, nuclear security, and counterterrorism. Finally, the United States will continue to engage directly with those Russian businesses and individuals who share American interests and values. And the United States will continue to speak out against laws and policies that impede the work of Russian civil society and violate the fundamental rights of freedom of expression, assembly, and association in Russia and elsewhere in the region. The United States will continue to strongly support its NATO allies while promoting freedom and democracy throughout Europe and Eurasia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
is for.